Welcome back to the Environmental Law Monitor. I'm your host, Daniel Pope. This podcast is brought to you by Bracewell LLP's Environment, Lands, and Resources Group. We're glad that you're taking some time out of your day to spend it with us. And we hope that you found our conversation on our last episode insightful and helpful as you try to understand the Supreme Court's recent decision in West Virginia versus EPA. If you're listening to this episode without having listened to the previous episode, you might be a little bit at a loss. We typically record episodes at about 30 minutes, something you can listen to on your commute, but we had such a fantastic conversation over the Supreme Court's decision in West Virginia versus EPA that we had to break it into two episodes. So if you're wanting to know more about the opinions in that case and what was going on at the court, what was going on in the legal challenges to the Clean Power Plan and so forth, pause this episode and go back and listen to the previous one. If you've already listened to our first episode, stay tuned because you're going to hear a great conversation breaking down the implications of that decision for federal agencies, for the Biden administration, and for courts as they seek to apply this new Supreme Court precedent. With that, let's jump back into where we left off at our last episode.
If I can just add one thought.
Sure.
You know, this administration has made it very clear that climate change is one of its three highest priorities. And it has adopted what it calls a whole of government approach, meaning that every department and agency of the federal government is supposed to be doing what it can within its powers to address climate change issues. And, I think one outgrowth of that is what we've seen with the SEC, that the SEC has a pretty ambitious proposal related to requiring certain disclosures of greenhouse gas emissions. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, is looking at considering climate change and deciding whether gas pipelines are in the public interest. And I do think that in some ways the major question doctrine is at the very least at real tension with that idea that we're going to be looking at parts of the government that haven't really been involved in climate change before, and at least arguably were not given authority to deal with those issues. So I think there is that tension that will play its way out. I wonder, based on just some of the blowback that the SEC may moderate its proposal, and perhaps the FERC as well. And so the question is, well, you know, will this be a signal to agencies that maybe they shouldn't be quite so ambitious, or whether they'll move forward and we'll see more of these challenges in the courts?
I think on our first episode of the Environmental Law Monitor, we had you, Jeff, and we were talking about climate change for the upcoming administration. And of course, we are several months into this administration. And you made a remark that I think this case sort of exemplifies. Back in that first episode, you commented that the previous administration, the Trump administration, of course, we've covered all of their efforts to reform administrative agencies and to align their programs with a little bit more strictly with their statutes, right? They wanted to ground the authority in the actions of agencies and what they believed Congress had authorized and instructed agencies to do. And one of the remarks you made was that, well, maybe President Trump's Supreme Court nominees will be sort of the ultimate backstop of that regulatory reform agenda. And I think in some ways we see this case as maybe proof of that. So I think that was a gold star prediction.
Thank you.
And it does seem like there's an element of the Supreme Court saying to these agencies, you know, stay in your lane. EPA, you regulate air emissions under the Clean Air Act. You don't make judgment calls about what the nation's energy mix is supposed to be. That's a different agency. So stay in your lane.
Yeah.
And maybe we're going to see that with the SEC and with FERC. Don't worry about climate in the same way that EPA should. SEC, you know, again, a similar thing.
But Dan, you make a good point about, you know, is what the court doing here is policing aggressive agency action. Cause I think as we've talked about before, Jeff Holmstead and I, you know, there are several strands of what they're, it seems like the, you know, this court and this majority is, you know, sees itself as doing. And one is exactly that, which you see not only in the major questions doctrine, but you also see in some of the Administrative Procedure Act type cases that have been percolating through the courts is, you know, sort of policing agency, not only aggressive agency action, but making sure that agencies follow the rules and how they do things. In addition to, as I mentioned, you know, from the majority and the concurrence here, is they see themselves as policing separation of powers, you know, the legislative branch versus the executive branch. And there's one other, you know, sort of principle that I think is important as well and doesn't play quite as significant of an explicit role in the majority opinion, but that's sort of policing federalism principles. You know, the concurrence talked a little bit more about it, I believe, but, you know, essentially here you have an instance where you have federal government versus state government and an argument by the states that they're intruding on state authority. And so there's other cases that maybe highlight the federalism component of this a little bit better, but as Justice Gorsuch said in the concurrence, you know, the major questions doctrine clear statement rule often travels together with the federalism clear statement rule. And so there's, you know, two or three principles that this court, I think, sees itself policing in cases like this.
So one of the, I mentioned at the outset that, you know, I was traveling when this case came out. And so I didn't have time to sit down and read through the 80 or so pages of the opinions that came out in the slip opinion. But I saw plenty of coverage on it immediately. And one of the things that I saw repeated over and over again was that, the Supreme Court has eliminated President Biden's ability to do anything on climate change. And Jeff Holmstead, I want to go to you. Where does West Virginia versus EPA leave the Biden administration in terms of its range of motion to address climate change over the remaining years of President Biden's first term in office? Obviously, EPA said to the Supreme Court that it was planning to do another 111D rulemaking at some point in the future. But what other, I guess that sort of means that we have a question in two parts here. First, is there anything left that EPA can do under 111D after the major questions doctrine in West Virginia versus EPA? And then what other things might the Biden administration do to address climate change using existing authorities over the next couple of years?
You know, honestly, in terms of what I think even the Biden administration was planning to do, I don't think that this decision has a significant impact on EPA. Yes, on the SEC, yes, on FERC. The one, I think, big issue is whether the efforts by EPA and NHTSA to transition the fleet from internal combustion engines to electric vehicles.
You're talking about the new tailpipe standards.
Yeah, the new tailpipe standards. There's certainly an argument that if EPA can't decide what percentage of the electricity should come from coal, that then it doesn't have authority to decide how much of our cars are electric versus something else. There's some complications with that argument. I'm sure that will be raised. Otherwise, the things that I think EPA was planning to do are pretty straight down the line: regulate methane emissions from oil and gas operations. You know, there may be issues there in terms of technical and economic feasibility. So I don't want to say that the administration can do whatever it wants, but it's certainly within its lane there, and using traditional sort of approaches to regulation. I don't think they were planning to do an aggressive clean power plan too. In fact, I know that from conversations with a number of people. So they won't be able to do generation shifting, but the court actually gave them a fair amount of leeway. It said, we're not deciding what they may or may not be able to do. And they even discussed favorably a rule that's near and dear to my heart called the Clean Air Mercury Rule, which is a cap and trade program under 111D. But as they pointed out, that was a mechanism to force plants over time to install pollution controls to reduce their mercury emissions. So I think even some sort of cap and trade scheme, as long as it's a way to control CO2 emissions from individual plants as opposed to shift generation. So we'll see. I think they, so they certainly have left open options that the Trump administration rejected in the ACE rule. And they didn't adopt the interpretation that the Trump administration had made. And I think left EPA with some more flexibility and then states with more flexibility as to what they could do under Section 111D. We haven't talked about that, but 111D is sort of a complicated provision that doesn't let EPA regulate directly, but to issue standards for states, and then states have some discretion as to how they meet those standards. So this is a long answer because you kind of have to go industry by industry and provision by provision, but I don't know that it will have a huge impact on the regulatory approach that they're planning to take.
That reminds me of something you said just a few moments ago, Jeff, that EPA has a number of different tools that have significant economic impacts when EPA updates a NAAQS, for example, that will ripple all throughout the economy. It's just that we have a clear statement there where Congress instructed EPA to make those significant moves that have sizable impacts on the economy. And under there, I think we would just be living quite comfortably with the Administrative Procedure Act and reviewing whether those rulemakings were arbitrary and capricious and so on and so forth. So it'll be interesting to see where the administration goes from here. One thing before we wrap up that I'd love to also hear your thoughts on is we've talked about what the Supreme Court did, what the concurrence advocated for and sort of explained as a historical basis for the major questions doctrine. We've talked a little bit about Kagan's dissent and the impact on agencies. I'm curious what both of you think that West Virginia versus EPA's impact will be on clients. How can clients wrap their heads around the significance of this ruling and rely on it in the future when they consider new agency actions that are going to be affecting them and their business?
I'd be happy to talk a bit about that. I will say that since the decision came out, I've had calls and emails from a number of clients saying, "Well, how does this help us in our case, and in our desire to challenge an EPA rule?" And for the most part, we've had to say we think you've been wronged by the agency, but we think the arguments we have will not involve the major question doctrine. I do think certainly we'll see it more often in cases. And I've mentioned three, I guess, the tailpipe standards mm-hmm. and the FERC rule and the SEC. It'll also be interesting to see how much it constrains agency behavior. We may ultimately not ever be able to point to things and say, "Oh, here's what it did or what it didn't do." But if you're a general counsel at an agency or a commission, and you're trying to make sure that you don't spend a lot of time working on a rule that's not going to stand up in court, you're certainly going to have to pay attention to this and not simply try to come up with a plausible interpretation of your statute that lets you do what you might want to do, even though that is certainly extraordinary, at least for the purposes of that agency.
So I have a question. I'd like to hear your thoughts on Jeff Olmstead. So we talked about, the executive branch agencies, we talked about courts, in leading up to this decision and then also in the wake of the decision, some of the things that I've read is, if the agencies can't do it, no one will because Congress can't act, that Congress can't get together and pass a bill on a topic like this. And Justice Gorsuch's concurrence, emphasizes, the importance of separation of powers, but also the reality that it is really hard to pass a law and that's by design. That's what the framers intended. And that's he argues a good thing. And I think he even makes the point that it's not unique to this time in our lives or in this country's life. So what are your thoughts, Jeff, on whether Congress actually has the ability to act on a topic like this on any, particular need that an agency like EPA might need, if anything?
We certainly are in a kind of polarized environment in DC these days. I think there's no question about that. But I also think, and we've seen in Congress in recent days even, come together on certain bipartisan issues. I think one of the problems we've had with climate change legislation in DC is you have advocates who are very concerned about climate change, who have very ambitious ideas about legislation and have not been willing, in some cases that I can think of, to make compromises that in their view would have made the legislation not ambitious enough. And I think one of the reasons that in fact I've been involved in conversations where they've basically said, you know, as long as we have the Clean Air Act as a backstop, we know that EPA has authority to take care of the problem. And if it looks like that's not the case, then maybe it will force more people to the table to make the kinds of tough choices and the compromises that usually have to be made to pass legislation. So I think it's actually a healthy thing for Congress, because it drives advocates of public policy changes back to where I think they should be, which is talking with members of Congress, talking with stakeholders, and trying to work out things that can actually be passed by Congress, even if people don't get everything that they want.
That's one of the reactions I had to this opinion as well. It was almost as if Chief Justice Roberts was saying, we're not going to underwrite congressional inaction on important areas by allowing agencies to interpret or arrogate to themselves new authorities and new powers to address emerging problems. We're going to expect that Congress is going to do its job, and we're going to restrain the executive. We are going to get rid of those sort of pressure relief valves, if you will. And it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next few years in light of a Supreme Court that's sort of disposed to assert its authority that way.
And one final point on that too, it was in both the Chief Justice Roberts' majority opinion and the concurrence, as one of the factors for applying the major questions doctrine is, you know, when Congress has tried to tackle an issue multiple times or in the past and has not been able to do so.
And it was interesting that scent charge that they were trying to use that as legislative history. And I think Justice Gorsuch said no, or maybe it was just actually Justice Roberts who said, no, we're not looking to this Congress to understand what prior Congress did or didn't intend, but as evidence that this is an issue of great political significance, if it's something that's so anyway, very interesting. I think an awful lot to unpack in both decisions. And I agree with Jeff Oldham that, yeah, this is one of those concurring opinions that may ultimately turn out to be very important. Maybe not quite so important as Youngstown Steel, but you know, along those lines, where a concurring opinion that attempts to kind of go through the thinking and lay out some of the factors is probably something that we'll all be citing to for a long time.
Well, thank you, Jeff. And thank you, Jeff, for being on the monitor today and sharing your thoughts on West Virginia versus EPA. This was a great conversation, and I very much enjoyed getting to be a part of it. That's it for our episode today. Thank you for tuning in. We will be, of course, watching how this opinion impacts agencies, impacts the federal government. And this is only one case. We've got more environmental cases at the Supreme Court coming up in the fall. We're going to hear arguments in Sackett versus EPA. So of course, we'll be discussing those as well when we have them. But for now, thank you for spending a little bit of your time with us. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Jeff. And thank you, Julie, and all the team that helps to put this podcast together. We will talk to you soon.